Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, Federal News Radio interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Ask the CIO with your host, Jason Miller.
And our special guest today is Henry Sinkowitz, the Defense Information Systems Agency Chief Information Officer. Henry, thanks so much for joining us.
Jason, always a pleasure. Thanks for having us on and giving us a chance to talk about the DISA message.
Well, we always love to catch up with DISA. You guys are one of the most fascinating organizations in government. I always tell people that when I retire or come back in my second life, I want to come back and work for NIST. I'll tell you, DISA is a second, right, 1A up there. If I can't make it at NIST, I'll come to DISA.
Well, I think we're hoping that you would want to come to DISA first, because obviously we have this great combination of both doing standards and doing a lot of the NIST functionality, but at the same time having a great mission and directly supporting the American warfighter.
Well, let's start with some basics. You've now been CIO at DISA for about 3 months. Give us some thoughts about how's it going so far. Remind us a little bit about your previous job at DISA.
My previous job inside of DISA was as the Technical Program Director for Computing Services. And in that role, I had responsibilities for the Rapid Access Computing Environment, the Content Delivery Service, the GCDS, the Akamai Network for the department, the Enterprise Services, and the service offerings that CSD is doing. And really, my focus there was on cloud computing and on how are we trying to transform the service delivery. The last 3 months have been a fascinating ramp up. Bobby Stempley, who was my predecessor in the job, left the fundamentals of a great team. I mean, obviously her transition to the Department of Homeland Security provided a big gap inside the agency, and I was very fortunate that General Pollitt assigned me into the position. What I've been most impressed with is actually a level of cooperation and collegiality across the agency and across the entire department. It's amazing to see the number of people who are really focused on trying to find operational, effective, impactful programs and projects that directly support the warfighter. It has been a fascinating journey as I've gone through it, seeing this, the sheer breadth and the experience that the DISA team is bringing out to the warfighter.
Now, I remember we saw each other at a conference, I think soon after you had been named CIO, and I said, oh, CIO, it's a pretty exciting move for you. And you actually said, no, I've been a CIO before, but this is a different type of CIO. So give us a little bit of your background. Where were you a CIO? I think it was the private sector, you said, and then how does this new position at DISA compare to maybe previous experiences?
This is actually the fourth time that I've had CIO responsibilities. The first three times were obviously in the private sector. I've been a government employee, a full-time civilian employee now for a little over 2 years, although I'd been a reservist. I retired as a reservist from the DISA family a few years ago, right around the time I went into computing services. The first two positions were with government contractors, and then the third one, I mean, it was actually for 6 years, was inside the airline industry. Again, a wonderful problem set. How do you support a huge geographically dispersed community? And very much like the DISA mission set here, on trying to support a very heterogeneous, very, very intensive, data-rich environment. And I've been able to actually use a lot of the lessons from that time in my life and trying to apply them directly inside the DISA family. I had a hiatus from the CIO seat for a few years. After I left the airline industry, I was actually the CEO of a small little open-source, open-standard software company based here in Northern Virginia, which I was the founder of. So some of these other enablers on open-source and open-standards technology, so I think you're going to see us trying to apply even more with inside the department.
It's kind of fascinating when you kind of go through your experience. In many ways, DISA is probably one of those agencies where you're going to be able to use all the skills, all the capabilities that you've developed over the years. If you think about both from the open source, running a company, to being the CIO both at a government contractor and within the airline industry, all of that probably plays into what you're doing now.
Well, and what was as important is that the DISA leadership and the departmental leadership really is allowing this type of innovation. We're using things like the base realignment and closure, the BRAC function, to help leverage and change the agency in the way that we're providing support. We're also using things like our campaign plan and that transformational aspect. And under the leadership of General Pollitt and our vice, General Hawkins, we're really trying to relook how effective we are across this entire warfighting spectrum, this continuum of services, and trying to leverage some of these new innovative technologies. You're seeing it with RACE. You're seeing this with Forge, GCDS, the Scrum development, the NS Leads. This whole notion of trying to figure out the most effective way of delivering services at the right cost point is some of the basic DNA of the agency.
It's fascinating that when you make a decision to come back to a CIO role, that is, it's a very tough role. I mean, you were working on cloud computing, as you said previously, for DISA, and cloud computing is a hot topic, a lot of buzz around it, people are excited. And then you move into the DISA CIO role, and you're still excited about cloud computing, but now it's almost like your aperture is much wider, and you have to consider many more things. Was it a hard decision to come back into become a CIO? And then was there any surprises or has been anything about the job that you kind of didn't expect based on previous experiences?
The BRAC move is truly becoming a forcing function inside the agency for more cross-sharing, additional configuration management, a lot of the same basic block and tackle pieces in that any other CIO goes through. We're just obviously compressing it in time as we get ready to make that move. And the CIO role in DISA, as well as many other organizations, is at times very much an internal-focused organization. We have to understand some of those basic block and tackles. How do we make sure the LAN is working properly? How do we ensure that the phone systems? I mean, a lot of those basic things we as an agency have to do with inside the CIO's organization. But you asked me some of the questions that surprised me when I took the role, and I think some of the surprises is at the sheer breadth of things that the CIO inside of the agency does. Compliance, so the Clinger-Cohen compliance, a little bit different than my previous roles. While I have done HIPAA and I've done SOX compliancy, the Clinger-Cohen stuff is a little different. The FISMA and making sure that we're tracking properly on FISMA, the Federal Information Security Management piece, again, is a slightly different role. And understanding the sheer breadth of some of our offerings, because obviously we're trying to make sure that we're doing the right thing for security across all of our offerings. And the DISA CIO is also the DISA DAA. So we're also, inside the CIO's organization, we also have the accreditation piece. So as we're bringing in some of these satellite programs, some of these other enterprise services, we have to go through the accreditation piece. Fortunately, DISA has the field security office up at Chambersburg under the direction of Mr. Bill Keeley. And the FSO, as our certifier, does a fantastic job of writing the DISA STIGs, writing some of these other security documentations and standards. And we're able to use that, and they sit there and act as my certifier. So again, another bit of a different role for me, although I'm fortunate to have a great team all around me.
I know from talking to CIOs on the show quite often, the compliance is could take up 99% of your time if you let it, and it's one of the most difficult areas that I think CIOs have to adjust to, especially if you come from the private sector where your compliance is maybe not as strenuous or arduous as other places.
With the 6 years inside the airline industry, the company I worked for actually operated under a Department of Justice consent decree the entire time, just because of that company's unique mission inside the airline industry. So I completely embrace the idea of a great deal of oversight. There is even more oversight inside a DoD sphere, and given this is a very unique mission, we are at times that very much that institutional provider of complex IT services, and with the breadth of satellites and terrestrial networks, the DECs, the Defense Enterprise Computing Centers, we obviously have to take into account that entire spectrum of service delivery and security within. So for me, that's just been another piece, and obviously ensuring that we are FISMA compliant and following Clinger-Cohen and all the other pieces is definitely a new part of the job.
All right, very good. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about your priorities and the big question that I think everyone wants to know from DISA. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Henry Sinkowitz, the Defense Information Systems Agency's Chief Information Officer.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Henry Sinkowitz, the Defense Information Systems Agency's Chief Information Officer. Before break, we talked a lot about your role as the CIO and kind of how you became the CIO. I want to talk a little bit about the big news that happened earlier, I guess last week now, about Defense Secretary Gates and the big announcements about cost cutting and changes to the DoD CIO office and what's that mean for DISA. I know it's still real early, but Secretary Gates said that he's going to eliminate the NII office, strengthen the DISA office around the CIO, and in some ways he seemed to insinuate he's going to make the defense CIO sit within DISA, which I'm not sure what this means for you. Tell us what you know so far. Give us some insight.
Thanks, Jason. Obviously, it is one of the questions of the hour, and I think we're still trying to understand some of the nuances of what the Secretary wants. I mean, we obviously fully support the Secretary's initiative to create efficiencies within the Department of Defense. The Secretary has recently appointed a task force to do this analysis, and as the decisions are being made, we're going to keep you informed. I mean, meanwhile, DISA does remain focused on supporting the warfighter by enabling information dominance in the defense of the nation.
As far as I know, there's, again, not a lot you can talk about, but did the Defense Department, did OSD give you any kind of timing, like we're going to make a decision in a month, in 6 months?
I think we're going to let the task force tell us how this rolls out, Jason. I believe the Secretary is having the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Cartwright, who truly understands warfighting needs and information needs, lead that initiative. And so we're obviously going to fully support where the Secretary and the task force drive us.
Very nice. Something I'm sure we'll touch base on as things develop in the future. One of the things you did mention was keep DISA focused on supporting the warfighter. You talked about a couple things earlier on, satellite communications. You talked about cloud computing, your old job, all probably pretty big priorities over the next 6 or 9 months. Talk about what you're focused on and what you hope to accomplish.
I think we've got obviously the whole series of campaign plan driven initiatives for the agency, and that is obviously continue to ensure that DISA is fully supporting the warfighter and information dominance. We've got a crystal clear focus on ensuring that our enterprise services, our defense enterprise computing centers, our network systems are all flexible and agile enough to be able to support the continuing and developing needs of the American warfighter. But remember, we as an agency are also going through that base realignment and closure, which is obviously very, very transformational for us. The agency itself just celebrated its 50th anniversary. We've been primarily focused here in Northern Virginia, but that's changing. We're moving up to Fort Meade. All of the facilities inside the National Capital Region are obviously moving to a 1.1 million square foot campus up on the Fort Meade installation. And so we're very, very focused on ensuring that transition is smooth and seamless, and we don't have any drop to warfighter support. So you're actually seeing a great deal of internal discussions, external discussions to ensure that BRAC transition provides absolutely positively no drop in support out to the warfighter needs. And that's actually that second part of my priority stream, is that I need to ensure that my steady state operations continue to happen. We, as the internal facing piece of the agency, looking at the internal business systems, we have to ensure that we're able to support our customers, who are the people who are supporting the warfighters themselves. So these other operational mission support networks, we have obviously a handmaiden's role there, but we're going to make sure that support really does give the service out to the warfighters that they deserve. The other priority in here is also this what I would consider this changing nature of IA. And I think, Jason, you've heard me talk about this publicly before, but we're looking at this change in the way that we are trying to support IA across the department. You've seen us over the last year reduce the attack plane. You've seen us harden the NIPR net, the non-secure IP router network, that the military's non-secure version of the internet. These things, this notion of how do we go there and do continual IA is actually, I think you're going to see a great deal more of activity. And when you look, when you were listening and when the industry was talking to us at our recent customer day at Fort McNair, Mr. Orndorff, who's our Program Executive Office for Mission Assurance, really did hit the idea that we're going and fundamentally looking, recrafting the way that we're going to support IA across the department.
I want to back up a little bit and start with the question around BRAC. If I remember correctly, 2011 is a big year for BRAC. I think you guys are supposed to move next summer. Is that correct?
No, we're starting the moves much earlier than that.
Okay.
I think you're going to start seeing some of the initial movements, some early. We already have a facility as an advanced party up at Fort Meade, so we have team members already on site, although not inside the new buildings. The new buildings, my team was in there just a few weeks ago. Absolutely beautiful first-class facilities. But we're going to start seeing some other transitions and shifting in the January timeframe. We're also taking advantage of this opportunity inside the agency to really leverage this to support the administration's consolidation of data centers. So some of these mission support functions that we've done in the DISA complex as the facilities here, we're actually transitioning into the decks. So we're using a lot of this as another forcing function so that we're going to consolidate and actually live exactly what we're telling our customers to do. Our internal support systems are all moving into the deck.
It's fascinating that not only are you consolidating data centers, but you're kind of walking the walk and talking the talk for what you're asking your customers to do. What's the effect on you as a CIO? Are you having to support parallel systems, one living for Fort Meade and one living back here in Virginia? Or because you're moving to the deck, it's like, you know, basically the cloud, it's, anyone can access it from anywhere.
We are actually doing a little bit of both. For some of our internal systems, we are targeting the move of our internal systems into the decks a few months before we start the movement of the team members up into the new facility. So by the time we're moving into that new complex, our systems will be up and operational with inside the decks. We're also going to take advantage of other enterprise offerings. We, obviously, as an agency, are supporting enterprise email. And so we've got to ensure that we, as an agency, are supporting the enterprise email infrastructure as well. So that, I mean, again, we firmly believe that if we're telling our customers you need to move in this direction, we, as an agency, internally are going to have to be there, not just with them, but actually before them.
Interesting you bring up enterprise email, because General Sorensen from the Army CIO, he spoke recently, and he talked about how the Army's working with DISA on some enterprise email, so eventually everyone can have a .DOD address. Is that part of that same pilot program that you're talking about, or is this kind of maybe a little separate, but,
no,
but a piece to it?
No, it's part and parcel. I mean, our computing services side is working very hand-in-hand with the Army, and we obviously are going to support wherever that goes. I, as the internal CIO, with my focus on the internal systems, I've got to make sure that I'm using those exact same enterprise service offerings that we're proposing that the rest of the enterprise uses. And that also includes things like the SharePoint offering that Computing Services is bringing out to the marketplace.
All right, very nice. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, we'll talk some more about some cloud computing. Maybe we'll talk about some of your other parties. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Henry Sienkiewicz, the Defense Information System Agency's Chief Information Officer.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com. CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller, and our special guest today is Henry Sinkowitz, the Defense Information Systems Agency's Chief Information Officer. Now, Henry, before break, we talked a lot about your priorities. BRAC is a big one, supporting the warfighter, another big one. And you brought up security, and there's no conversation that I have with the CIO or many other people in government that doesn't always come back around to cybersecurity. You talked about over the last year you want to reduce the attack plane, harden the nipper net. Talk about how you're recrafting your support for information assurance, information security across the department.
We have got some of the best thought leaders in this space. Richard Hale, our Chief Information Assurance Executive, Mark Orndorff, our Program Executive Office for Mission Assurance, are people who are really taking the lead on trying to find the right answer to secure this infrastructure. So we're looking security across all of the enterprise. We're looking at things on, again, as you noted, I mean, how are we reducing that attack surface and that attack plane? Recognizing that over the last year, we believe we've reduced it by about 95% by that nipper net hardening, by the introduction and the standardization of our internet access points. We're also looking at the notion of continual IA, continual monitoring. NIST and NASA have done some great work on the idea that certification and accreditation, at times, we don't want it to be purely looking at paper, but we want to make sure that we're doing a continual check across the enterprise at all times. And I think you're going to be seeing a great deal more of efforts in that space itself. Mr. Orndorff is vigorously working on that, and I think the industry and the department will be well served by a lot of these efforts. We're also trying to ensure that we're baking in security. When we're looking at software development projects and agile development and the rest of the Scrum processes that you're seeing us enable with things like Race and Forge, we're also trying to ensure that we're giving enough guidance for security so that developers and other people who are bringing items into the environment, other software vendors or product vendors, we're making sure that they're baking in the appropriate level of security from the get-go.
Now, I want to jump back to one of the things you said, continuous monitoring. It's a big push for both from OMB and both within agencies more generally. Obviously, there's a number of pieces of legislation on the Hill that talks about continuous monitoring as well. Can you give us any kind of even general idea of how you're going to institute that? Because DISA is not only huge, but it also potentially has to deal with the rest of DOD as well, even if you just provide services to the other military units.
I think you're going to see us using some of the things that we've already started. Host-based security, for instance, gives us some of the initial enablers for continuous monitoring. The vulnerability management system, the VMS, and the EMAS systems, you'll see a much tighter coupling of the HPSS, the VMS, the EMAS systems, so that we're able to get much clearer insights. Recognizing that this, when we still had the Joint Task Force for Global Network Operations as part of the agency, we instituted the Cyber Command Readiness Inspections, the CCRI, so that we're doing assistance visits to help the combatant commanders and the services improve their cybersecurity posture. And obviously, we as an agency go through those same levels of inspections. I think you're going to see a continual refinement of that process as well. So we're going to be expanding the breadth and the depth of the scope. We've, across the department, have seen some wonderful results as we've given a little bit more rigor and greater insights into that readiness process.
Let me jump over to one more question before we let you go. We talked a lot about security. One thing that we haven't really talked too much about is cloud computing, which obviously has a security piece to it. DISA runs Race. It runs Forge.mil, which was just used very successfully, I should add, by the Army for its Apps for the Army program. What does the future hold around Race, around Forge.mil?
We actually just see a continual growth and emphasis on this. I mean, we as an organization have completely embraced the idea of agile, dynamic provisioning, secured, scalable, elastic. I don't want to keep using all of those buzzwords because I think at times we have all been PowerPointed to death. But using partnerships like Apps for the Army have been able to allow us to recraft it as a market offering. I mean, we internally learned a lot of lessons. We learned lessons about private co-branding so that we were able to give the Army their own portal. We learned lessons about allowing middleware applications. And I think you're going to still see those other partnerships. You're going to see partnerships with organizations that are also pushing this envelope, like Transcom, and where General Earl Matthews and his deputy Bob Osborne are creating things like the Knowledge Management Lab out at Scott Air Force Base that are really embracing the exact same principles. So you're going to see us having that continued emphasis on innovative service delivery, RACE, Forge, and then also when you look across that entire stack of cloud computing, global content delivery system, the Akamai network. I mean, we're just seeing more and more adoption of that. The 56 nodes are up and running. We're adding more products every day. We're working on things like enterprise recursive services. So you're still seeing DISA looking across the entire stack and using my colleague Peter Mell's definition and parsing out of the different pieces of the cloud for platform and infrastructure applications and software. You're seeing a concerted push across all of those environments from the DISA family.
And from your perspective internally now, obviously you used to look more externally, now you're looking more internally. Are you guys within DISA using RACE and Forge.mil to address internal needs?
Yeah, most assuredly. I mean, we, again, going back to what we had talked about earlier, I mean, we have to embrace internally and use ourselves as, at times, the initial testbed for some of these things. And I think one of the better examples for where we were the testbed, I mean, we put it up, we installed it onto our internal production system immediately. It was an initiative called the DoD Visitor, which is that ability to use your CAC card to log in and sign into a computer anywhere in the department. And so I in my role as the DISA DAA, I was the one who accredited it for the department, but in my role as the DISA CIO, I also was the first one to install it on a production network. And so you're going to see more of that activity as well, where we're going to test and try it internally before we launch it out to the rest of the marketplace.
Cloud computing, everyone kind of thinks of that as cutting edge for DISA, that may be kind of old hat now. But what are some of the other cutting edge, leading edge technologies that you're looking at, that you're testing?
Inside that same construct, the notion of collaboration and social networking, you're seeing much more adoption inside the construct of Forge.mil and how we're allowing those types of social networks to really develop. The UCC, this unified communications environment, we're completely embracing real-time services as we're building out the new facility up at Fort Meade. We're also using PKI, and at times people think of PKI as an old hat. We've had it inside the department for a while, but we're using PKI and we're really pushing attribute-based access control at the same time. So how do we have an ABAC and allow a greater granularity of security and integrity with inside the systems? We're working with our NII partners to develop security standards for smartphones with inside the DoD network. So our CTO shop, Mr. Mihalcik's group, is very actively engaged in that. And then obviously the agile development and the scrum processes that Dr. Hutchinson is doing, and our NS Liaison, the National Senior Leadership Decision Support System, we're cranking out code every 3 weeks. And then the other one is the V Office, where we're putting up a pilot of web-based applications, office productivity applications, as a small pilot of about 1,000 people strong, so that when you log in and you use that DoD visitor, you can actually log on and grab applications that you can go and store things. So you'll see the vOffice and the vDrive, where you're able to store this as part of this entire continuum of service offerings.
All right, you have a ton going on. I think we could talk probably for another half hour, but unfortunately, we are out of time. So we're going to have you back on maybe in 6 months or so and do a lot of catch up. You've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Our special guest today is Henry Sinkowitz, the Defense Information Systems Agency's Chief Information Officer. Henry, thank you so much for joining us.
Jason, thank you. Always a pleasure talking to you and having a chance to communicate really all the great things that this agency is doing.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer, brought to you by Vion Corporation on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.